Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Matt and Dwight Just Might, a podcast about two Midwest-based comedians who are figuring it out, or at least doing their damnedest to figure it out as they make their way through life, love, laughter, comedy. That's it.
Yep.
I don't know. I used to have this. And now if anybody's been a listener for a long time, this thing used to go on and on and on. And now I don't have it. I need to work on my stamina, my breathing capacity. I run out of oxygen.
Yeah. A little air there. It used to be all L words.
Yes.
But then you got to what the core of the podcast was supposed to be about at the end there and just threw in some comedy.
Sure.
Which I don't know how our fans feel about that.
Yeah, I don't know if they come to this podcast for comedy. That's why I took it out. I was like, you know, this is no place for jokes.
No. Yeah, if you come to this podcast for comedy, you need to get your life together. I could offer you several recommendations on actual comedy podcasts.
Yes, no, everybody comes here for the hip-hop talk, so let's get to it. Top five most underrated MCs of all time, go.
Oh my goodness, we got The Informer, Bubba Sparks.
Okay, all right, for a second I thought you meant Snow, who did the song Informer. I was like, bold choice.
No, he's number two.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, we're working backwards. I did start looking at The Roots Are Coming Here, August 20th.
Oh, yeah?
So I started looking at tickets for that. So that's awesome. A Sunday, so... Like, I'm not anywhere that weekend, I don't think. So I might do that. That's my favorite band. So
yeah, they're pretty great. I've never gotten to see them live. I was always into The Roots, always liked them from early on. And it was, kind of a novelty thing that they were a live band doing hip hop. You know, not
right.
Really hardly anybody else was doing that at the time. But then, like, when you see them in, like, Chappelle's Block Party film, it's just like, damn. Like, that was the first, I think, you know, now you could see them all the time on The Tonight Show and you see how talented they are. But back then, you're like, God damn.
Like,
Questlove is, like, leading everybody. They got guests coming in left and right. And it's just, like, all seamless and perfect. And
I love it. Anybody you talk to that's seen The Roots live, they're like, it's an amazing show. And I've been a fan since I was in high school. So the fact that I haven't seen them live is, like, it's, like, top tier, top of the list. Janet Jackson was just here with Ludacris and I was out of town and I was bummed that I didn't get to see that because I am a Miss Jackson fan myself.
Yeah. I would put Luda maybe on one of my, he might make the list of my most underrated MCs because he's never in the conversation and he's utterly unique in the way that he rhymes and flows. There's nobody like him. It's super catchy.
Yeah.
And he sold a bazillion records.
He definitely
did. So, yeah. But I don't know why people like sleep on him as far as like a technical rapper because he has stuff that's like, you know, not the hardest, but I mean, it like at least he stood out from everybody else. He didn't chase the flavor of the week like a lot of hip hop people did.
Well, he decided to become the biggest movie star in the world.
He needed to be part of that family, doc.
Yeah. So it's been a slow week for me, comedy wise, as you can tell.
We're not talking about comedy.
Nope.
This is the one where we finally spend the entire hour just talking about hip hop. And
I was on vacation with the family in Wisconsin this weekend for Father's Day and my brother-in-law's birthday, his 30th birthday. And it was awesome. The weather was beautiful.
Great.
Really like put the phone down outside of a couple of emails I had to send. And then I got back. Yesterday, we took my niece to her first movie. We went to see Elemental. Blew her little brains out.
How old is she?
Just two.
And this is her first movie ever? Like,
yeah, she, first movie. Time in the theater.
In the theater. Okay, gotcha. Yeah. Yeah, she's not like Amish or something. Y'all didn't roll up and kidnap her. And then
No. we just took her to a movie. That would be enough to like,
Rumspring is coming early for you, girl. We're gonna start with this DreamWorks, this Pixar.
Happy Juneteenth, everybody. This is how I spent it. In a dark movie theater,
kidnapping a little white girl and
yep blowing her mind. She loved the popcorn. So I didn't do much comedy stuff and then got back into it today, and now I'm in a terrible mood because I got some awful new- well one I looked at my calendar for, and I designed it this way, but now we got to the point where it's like, why did I do this? Like July's very all hyper local shows outside of going to Michigan for one show. Like I did that intentionally to like give myself a little break, but also build out some material. Mm-hmm. But now I have the anxiety of like, oh, I'm not really working this next like 3 or 4 weeks. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So you're not getting like big full club weekends. You're doing like just spots and like one off. But I mean, are these paid spots? And these are paid one nighters. I'd
say half and half. Like I do have shows, but it's not like coming off of before Limestone, where it was just every week, every weekend, and then like it was just full. And so I did need that break. So it'll be fine. But it was just today I was like, I got to start booking stuff again. I want to be
what you did all day today is you just said you were sending out booking emails and stuff.
Yep. Yeah. And I should be listening to sets that I did last week. We had our show at Googman House. It was a small crowd, but they were fun. Try to keep it like super local outside of Nat Baymail from LA. Do you know Nat?
Mm-mm.
He's about my age and super funny. He is like, this is his first real tour of the Midwest. And so he started with my show and he's going to Cincinnati. He's doing all the Midwest hot one nighters. I consider my show that, but it was fun. But I did get to work on like 8 minutes of new material that went pretty good up top. Just having fun with it.
It's good.
But I haven't listened to it. So who knows? I could have just been like, oh, I'm about to have a weekend. So
you were just in a good mood. Unless I'm done with this bullshit tonight, I'm going to be out there on the lake. It's going to be good.
Yeah. And then you're hosting. So you're pretty much done. You're just like, keeping the energy up. But yeah, that was fun. And then I had the weekend and then I sent emails today. And I got an email back from the theater that I've been wanting to premiere my special that it's not going to happen. It fell apart. Due to like several different things, but mostly because I couldn't get a copy, a screening for the theater from the production company. It was like dealing with these two very difficult things that would not budge. Because my production company is like, this isn't normal. It won't be ready for like screening. Like we're still 6 weeks out. And so it won't be ready. I was like, can we send them something? And it was just like, no at every step. Yeah. And they're saying it's super abnormal for a theater to request this. You know, he goes and like,
he also just said that they've never done this before. So how would they know that?
Done what? No. They've released a lot of stuff in theaters.
Oh, okay. They have. Okay.
Yeah. But he's saying they've not had to give a special screening or like a preview or anything like that.
Like a screener. Yeah.
Yeah. Like they've never had to do that before. And he was like, do you think they ask A24 for a screener? I was like,
were you like, do you think you're A24?
I was like, brother, I love you, but come on, man. I was like, I understand if you don't want to do it, but let me know. So I just got the email back that they we just took too long. We took too long to get the wheels in progress, like, or the wheels in motion. So that was a bummer. So now I'm looking for alternatives.
Yeah. Well, fuck IMAX. I'll put it right there, man. IMAX, they don't want to show you up there on the 300-foot screen. We don't need them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. These sons of bitches. Like, I'm done taking my nieces and nephews to see Elemental.
Yeah.
I'm going straight Tupac, hit them up on all these theaters. No, it's a bummer because it's a really cool independent theater that I thought would be really fun to get like 50 to 60 people in there and just like, it's like barely over 50 minutes. So,
it seems very odd that they wouldn't do it. And now you're looking for other options. So it's not dead in the water. There might be another theater that'll do it, you know?
Yeah.
But if there is no theater that'll do it, is that going to make you really regret having like the all red leather jumpsuit that you taped in?
The red leather, mostly the boots. They were very uncomfortable to do my act outs in.
Yeah.
Almost fell over twice.
Yeah.
This special comes with outtakes.
Yeah. 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 I was going Eddie Murphy. You went Kinky Boots, and I like that we took that in two different directions. Yeah, it was good.
Well, I was about to ask: is Red Raw or Delirious?
I think Red is. I think it's Raw, and then or maybe, I don't know, and then the other one's Purple.
They're both like leather.
They're both ridiculous. They're both amazing. Yeah. And they also, the only problem with both of those jumpsuits is the zipper only went up like a little bit above his belly button.
No, that's not a problem.
Back. I would have got my money back if I was him. Like, they don't have a zip all the way up.
What was he, like 22 and just like ultra fit? Yeah, that was not a problem.
Yeah.
That was not a problem for him. Him and Matt Rife.
Yeah. Oh, yes. I mean, like, we might as well continue the saga of Matt Rife. So,
but yeah, that was the extent of my weekend comedy. Well, hip hop.
I actually had a comedy weekend for the first time in a long time, over a month. It had been, I think, 5 weeks since I had done shows because I was just, you know, one of us takes limestone seriously and actually prepares for it. So,
not me, baby, not me. I'm getting threatened to Detroit.
Exactly.
Some things are more important.
You're trying to get Kyle killed is what's happening. So I was at the Blue Room Comedy Club in Springfield, Missouri, which is a club that we've both done several times over the years. Your poster's on the wall right when you first walk in. It's always nice to see you there. That's it. Yep, you're in the pose right there. And so, I was featuring Friday and Saturday for Harlan Williams and then headlining on Sunday, the show that we talked about a little bit last week, which was this. I thought they were at least at some point going to market it as a Father's Day show, but they did not. They marketed it as their final Matt Rife raffle show. And we did talk about this in the podcast, did we not?
We did.
Okay. I know that you and I talked about it, but I didn't remember if it was on air or off air. But yeah, so we'll get to that in a second because that was the last night.
You're killing me with the buildup. I love it.
Yeah. I do want to give a shout out, to Josh Wingo, local comic, was on most of the shows and just really, really good. And this is a kid that I've seen come up, you know, because again, I play the Blue Room like once a year, usually at least, and then sometimes twice a year if it's a featuring kind of situation. And I've seen him over the years, and he's just gotten really, really strong. Like they kind of changed up the way they did it, where it wasn't like a straight host. Feature headliner set, they kind of did a weird piggybacking thing halfway through. So I think he hosted the first night and then on Saturday we piggybacked.
Okay.
For some reason, we just switched it up. It was really bizarre.
This club is trying every format imaginable.
Chris knows there's no rules, baby. He's like a jazz artist, man. He's just going to throw it out there as he feels like it.
It's like those board game dice. It's like, just like have different options on them. It's like, all right, tonight we're piggybacking and you have to plug a show that's probably going to sell out by itself in like 12 months.
Yes. Yeah. So, I did find that out talking about the raffle. I did figure out how they were able to do this raffle stuff. But Harlan Williams got into town. His flight was delayed. And so he got into town like an hour before showtime. And so, okay, cool. Everything's still going to be cool. It's going to be good. But no, he wanted to go to the hotel and take a nap.
My dude.
Yeah. Which I mean, if you were in Rocket Man, you can do that. If you were, in Periscope Down, you can do that. You kind of got that flex. And so they pushed back the start of the show for a while. Just to add more time into his nap time. And then they threw in him a guest set. They threw up a guest set as well.
Yeah.
And they told me, they're like, we'll just light you when he's here and you can wrap it up. And he's here and he's ready. And I wound up not actually doing, I still wound up only doing like 20, which is kind of like what they were thinking. Like they kind of said, you know, he's wanting to do a full hour.
Right.
So probably just going to be a 20 minute feature spot. So I wound up only doing 20. Yeah. He crushed all of his shows. It was
well-rested human being. He's fine.
He got a nap in.
We can all crush if we get 8 hours plus a nap.
But the early show, first time on stage in over a month, I'd listened to the last really strong weekend of tapes that I had, which was out in Tacoma when I was working at the Tacoma Comedy Club right before I went to Anchorage. I just listened to all those sets in the hotel room before going over there. Early set, I did really, really well. Got cocky on the late show. I tried to open with like a weird, like improvisational crowd worky type thing, which just did not work and should not have worked. I was not fleshed out enough. It was weird. I just started off in a hole. And I would get out, and I was so self-conscious about how awkwardly I started that I kept putting myself back into new holes.
calling back to the opener?
And just also like just being like not confident and just kind of really, I would get out of it. And then if a joke didn't like totally hit, if it just did okay, then I immediately was like right back to like, oh, you guys hate me. You know, like that thing where you talk the audience into not liking you.
Yep.
I 100% did that. And the thing is like, you know, I'd been off for a month and like that muscle of just like, nope, just push through. You got to be in control. You got to show. This sounds like some dumb, like Rogan alpha male shit, but there is something to the point of like, you have to be like, you have to be the one in control. You have to give them confidence that you know what the fuck you're doing, that it's going to be okay to trust you, you know, when you're up there. If you're kind of like, second guessing yourself and they can see it, then they're not going to laugh because they're going to be like, why are we here? You know,
right.
Like, it's just like, so it was bad, but then the rest of the shows were great. I did great. The rest of the shows, I really took it to heart. I didn't beat myself up too badly about it. I used it as a positive.
That's great.
On Saturday to like really kind of get my head straight, really think about what I wanted to do with each set. You know, I worked on a couple of new things, but just like dropped them in a little bit here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And then, had really, really fun, solid sets on Saturday. And then Sunday, I was closing out the Matt Rife raffle. And
that's the name of the show.
That was Matt the name Rife. Of the show. That was like, it's how it was billed.
Oh,
it was come to this event to win a chance to win tickets to mm-hmm. Matt Rife. And the way that they've been sold out forever, too, just like everybody else. And the thing is, like, they just happened to have booked, because, you know, like most clubs, they book the headliners out pretty far. They had happened to go ahead and book Matt Rife when he was just starting to come up.
Yeah.
And then he's blown up since then. Okay. So they're sitting on gold, essentially.
Gotcha.
But so once he started to catch fire, the rest of the tickets sold out. They weren't, this isn't why they did this, but it's the reason they were able to have extra tickets now to give away is they moved that sound booth. You know, the sound booth was kind of big and in the back and
giant,
a lot of, so it is now behind the stage. There's like a little tiny like tech booth now behind the stage.
Okay.
And so that opened up that seating there. So they, then suddenly their room have an additional, I don't know, 12 tickets or whatever for each show.
That's and a you're telling me you don't need a 6-monitor multimedia set to run sound for a comedy club.
Yeah. Well, you know, that was how it was when they inherited it too. You know, the beautiful story of that club is that, you know, they were a very scrappy startup club that was in the back of a pool hall. And did you ever work it when it was back then?
I did.
Yeah,
I did.
And so the room was fun. It was small.
It was awesome.
It was a fun, good vibe room. Like it was always good. And they, you know, basically had a falling out with the actual pool hall who owned the building, who they were like, you know, leasing the space from. So they're looking for a new space. This is a downtown church / I don't know, whatever the hell it was, but it was some kind of church thing that they had come into a brand new building. The church had spent all this money to turn mm-hmm. it into a cool, hip young person church, you know, thing. And then the main preacher, pastor of the church got busted for, I believe it was for selling drugs or just having tons of drugs on them or something.
That's so, called like knocking it out of the park, though,
mm-hmm,
on your mission statement. We're going to be cool and hip, but not have drugs. That doesn't make any sense.
Exactly.
This is the most honest preacher I've ever heard of.
Yeah.
I love
that. Like, he's taking it all the way. He's like, look, how are we going to get the young people in here?
Yeah.
look, do you want to hear about Jesus or do you want to see Jesus?
Yeah, do you want to? Yeah, exactly. The Lord bloweth and bloweth again.
But so basically this church had spent, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not $1 million, renovating the space, putting in the whole, you know, the front bar area was like a coffee shop that was open throughout the week. And so literally it was just turnkey ready for them. They basically just painted the showroom dark colors.
Mm-hmm.
and then just went with it. But that's why they had that enormous soundboard, is because they used to have like a, you know, praise band up there, like a 32 channel, you know, mixer for the praise band and all that kind of stuff. So it really is one of these amazing things where they just were lucked into it, this beautiful, amazing space. It reminds me of also the story. This is non-comedy related, but since we have a lot of Indianapolis people who listen to this, Radio, when David, I think his name's Davey, the guy who was making that that venue, happened to take a shortcut through an alley in downtown Indy when Planet Hollywood, was it Planet Hollywood or Rock and Roll Cafe? It must have been a Rock and Roll Cafe.
I think it's Rock,
So R&R. The Rock and Roll Cafe went out of business and all their shit was sitting in the alley behind the building waiting for pickup. And so like the bar that's in Radio was at the... like rock was at the Hard Rock Cafe. He just basically immediately went rented a U-Haul and came back and stocked his entire venue with shit from the Hard Rock Cafe that it's amazing. Phenomenal.
Yeah,
it's absolutely beautiful. Yeah,
that's awesome. I love that story. I obviously love the Blue Room. I love, like, if Chris listens to this, the owner of the Blue Room, he won't, but this dude's a like bona fide crazy person. Like, we talked about it before.
You're not surprising him.
Yeah, you've got to have a little edge of that, or a little tinge of that, if you're going to run a comedy venue, and that you're going to run it well. So you're going to take these risks. You're going to, like, that first room you talked about is where I recorded, actually, my second album, Sip and Pass, before re-recording it at the White Rabbit. I was supposed to open for you.
Yeah.
And then I think you got sick or something.
Yeah.
And then you just bumped me up to headline, and I brought Joe Bates and we had a blast.
Yeah.
We had a blast, but it's in like a less walkable part of the town than the new venue is.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I was one of the first people that they ever booked. Like, Tim Northern is why there's a comedy club there.
Yeah.
Chris was putting on, like, I think a monthly show there. And Tim was like, this is a comedy club, the original space, which it really was a great space for it. And so he's the one who talked them into going full weekend. And then I think the second or third people they had like Greg Warren, and then they had like Dusty Slay with Hannah Hogan back when Hannah was still performing. And then I got the call kind of early from Chris, like out of the blue, because I got referred by some of those people as someone he might want to bring in. And it was cool because I did that room several times and also saw him build it, where more and more people were coming just because, oh, this is a thing. This is a thing we have in our town now. But the new space is absolutely beautiful, and like, it's a big, beautiful pro club, man. Like, and he is a little bit of a crazy man, but you're right. Like, he's not alone in that with being a comedy club owner.
No. It's a very normal thing for comedy club owners to have this, like, these very eccentric traits. We should play like comedy club owner. And just like name different traits and try to guess who they are.
So let me tell you about the Sunday Matt Rife show. So now we know how they have the tickets for it. Okay. So they did another one of these on Thursday night, which they were like, it was great. Everybody came, like, they had a good crowd for it. They said, and they were a great crowd. Apparently the other time they had done this previously, people were just kind of like arms crossed. Like, when is this thing over? When do I find out if I won the raffle or not? Like, they weren't there for a comedy show.
Right.
My crowd Sunday, because it was Father's Day, I think, and because they'd done this a few times before, the sort of draw of it was probably the novelty of it had maybe worn off a little bit. We still had about 60 people out there on a Sunday, so not bad. And they were great. I had like so much fun. It was a loose set because I was closing, so I had more time. You know, I wound up doing like 35 or 40 or something. They did a little bit more of like a showcase type style. So they threw on some more locals and some other great locals, like a guy named Derek, who I've seen before, who's really good, who came up in the LA scene and then moved back to Springfield when he had a kid. It was a solid show, top to bottom and everything. But then I don't know if it's because they were like skeleton crew because it's a Sunday, they're not normally open or whatever, but the actual getting the raffle part of it at the end done took forever. It took a really long time. And so, because the way they did it is every item that you bought, you got a raffle ticket. And so if you bought multiple drinks or, you know, mm-hmm. appetizers or whatever, then you got multiple tickets. And then they did a thing at the end after I was done where Chris went back up. He was like hosting the show. And he said, you know, all right, here's what's going to happen is we're now going to like figure out how many tickets everybody got, what their bills right now. We're going to take like a 10 or 15 minute break, play some music. If you go back and buy merch for Matt or Derek, we'll give you extra tickets. If you buy merch, you'll get an extra ticket. It was like a nice little prompt thing. And it worked well. We both did well on merch. But then like they still didn't have the, like, I think they were still like just trying to even just drop checks at this point, let alone this ticket.
Oh, geez.
So it took forever. So then Chris is like up there just stalling for time. And God bless him, he's doing everything he could think of. He's like having people come up in the audience to tell street jokes. And then they get an extra ticket.
Dear God. Trip.
A guy comes up and does 40 push-ups to get extra tickets. People start playing rock, paper, scissors. He's just doing anything you can think of.
This is turning into a Ringling Brothers three-ring circus. It really
was so
outrageous.
It was so so crazy and wild and everything. And it took forever for them to get the ticket situation. And again, nothing into staff. The staff there is very professional. Anything. I think they just like had half the normal amount of people from when they had done it before.
Right.
Even though it was a smaller crowd, they're like, yeah, this is like, we're not prepared for this.
Yeah.
It was a wild way to end the weekend for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. That's I don't know how do you solve that other than just like when someone does bring something, you just bring a ticket to them
right
in
then.
The moment. Yeah.
Yeah.
Instead of like, because this is the most impressive thing about comedy club staffs, the way that they're able to close out so many checks once very quickly. That's very difficult. I've been a server and like if we have a table of 12, I'm gone. Yeah. And that's just like a regular occurrence for comedy club staff. And
yeah, they're trying to close out, you know, a couple hundred checks all at once. You know,
if you add like anything to that, it's going to make it take a lot longer than it normally would. So I don't know how you make it easier on the staff, but
well, this is the last one of these that they're gonna do, and so they don't have to deal with it again. But it was wild, man. I did do a little Matt Rife research that day in the hotel room.
Yeah,
because I don't know if it was you or somebody told me that he also got to start opening for Ralphie, which was, you know, mm-hmm. Ralphie was a big leg up for me earlier in my career.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and so there's the thing where I still didn't watch any of his stand-up. I don't know why. I think I just Google Matt Rife and Ralphie May to see like, oh, I want to see where someone heard this story. And I guess a lot of it comes from Matt Rife was on Bert Kreischer's podcast. And so there's like these little for social media clipped up parts of where he's talking. And I was like, okay, so yeah, he did open for Ralphie, I guess, like after I did, a couple years after I did, when he was still pretty young. So I still have not seen any of his stand-up.
You couldn't do it? You couldn't get to that part of the research?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't that. Well, to be honest, like, I didn't, because he kind of, yes, jokingly, but he was also kind of, like, making fun of Ralphie's weight and a couple other things about Ralphie. I'm like, yo, he's dead, and he was very good to you. And it's a different thing if Ralphie makes fun of his own weight versus you, pretty boy, young pretty boy on the come up.
Right.
Benefited from him to then take a couple cheap shots on this podcast.
Yeah.
Like, it just didn't sit well with me, you know?
Of course. So, and that's just like a young person, like, making a mistake on a very public stage.
And it wasn't like it was anything super harsh, but there was a joke here and there. And, you know, and Bert was making a couple of cracks here and there too, or whatever. Yeah. But also, you know, Bert's a tubby dude.
Exactly. He's part of the club.
Leeway. He's a little bit more of a leeway there for him to do it. But so I didn't love the podcast clips that I saw. So I was like, I'm not gonna watch this fucker's fucking stand up. It's fine.
Were you watching or researching to like make
I wanted to
material
talk about
him?
I just wanted to kind of rip on him a little bit up top, not shit on him, obviously, because everybody there was there to see him. I did ask, is there anyone here that's just here because it's a comedy show and you don't even know who Matt Rife is? And there's like two people.
Okay.
So the other 58 people were there specifically. And then I joked around him. I was like, okay, the rest of you are like we only care about Matt Rife. Wrap it up. When they get out. And I got a laugh. And they were good. They were, again, a great crowd.
What was the demo?
man, it was all over the place. It, you know, we, I know we talked about it's going to be a young, bunch of young girls or whatever. There was a father, and there was like a married couple with their adult daughter who was, I think, 18. I know she was 18 because we met at the merch table later, and she was on her way to start college in the fall.
Okay.
The mom, so the mom is probably, you know, my age, you know, late 40s, early 50s. And she was wearing a Matt Rife t-shirt.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, hopefully bringing her good luck, you know, to the raffle. And so, which I saw that from the stage, we're sitting like right up by the stage, and I said, oh, is that a Matt Rife t-shirt? And she's like, yeah. And I was like, oh, cool. You know, I have t-shirts for sale too. And,
yeah. So you're willing to buy merch. So.
Just FYI, you know, just so you know, you want to add to the collection, you know. But that's no, it was kind of, it was, you know, mostly younger, but there were some older people there too. And
yeah, I don't, know. You don't get that big by just having one demographic that likes you, or, you know, like we said, he does a lot of crowd work clips, and you can mess with a lot of different people if that's you're true. Good at doing it, or if that's like your thing. So
I will say this too. There was a, cause I did talk about being in an interracial marriage, and I said, is anybody else here also in an interracial relationship? And there was like a person who yelled out, and it was a young woman, and she was there with her dude. And so she was a young Black woman, and she was there with her white boyfriend or husband. I never really got into it with them, but then they were also there with her parents. Right.
Yeah.
And so then I was like, and then I didn't really do any other crowd work. I just went back into like, anyway, oh, cool, cool. Thanks for being here. And I, you know, you have the dumb throwaway jokes. Like when I say anybody here is in an interracial relationship and someone woos, I'm like, I look at them like, oh, cool. I recognize you from the meetings. Right. Like little dumb hacky shit that you do. And so I then went back into talking about my life, and you just saw them kind of like, oh, you're not going to make fun of my white husband. I was like, no. It's my show. It's, we're talking about me.
I brought him here specifically so that you could say.
And my parents. So you could roast me. Yeah, exactly. But, but I did wonder, like, is that one of the things that they're into? I did, when I was doing my research, though, I did find a thread of apparently in some podcast, or some YouTube clip or something, Matt Rife was asked, like, what's his least favorite city? And he immediately said Atlanta.
Oh.
And he's talked about how much he hates Atlanta. He's never had a good show there, whatever. And so in the comments is like 100,000 Black people dunking on him.
Yeah.
And like bringing up all kinds of other shit, not just about this thing he said about Atlanta. Like, well, also that time he did, I was like, oh, okay.
Shit.
I guess there's a maybe one part of the population that's not a big fan of Matt Rife. They accused him of using Black voice, which is, of course, a thing that was leveled against Awkwafina for a while, too.
Yeah.
That using Black voice until you get successful, and then all of a sudden it goes away. Right.
Yeah.
You know, and it's so,
sorry not to bother you.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. What a fantastic movie. Oh, speaking of which, Boots got another thing coming out. Did you see?
I saw. I'm excited.
Yeah. I'm a Virgo, which looks dope. All right.
Yeah.
That's our recommendation. Not our own comedy, not our own podcast, not Dwight special, which you can't see in the theaters.
Yeah, you will not be able to see it in theater, but it will. If you have T-Mobile Plus, it'll go straight to your phone or iPad.
Have you tried like debuting it on like the little TV at the gas pumps? Like can you get with them?
Oh, instead those
of Cheddar, instead of Cheddar News and Maria Menounos, going to be you doing like a joke?
How many times have you been startled awake by one of those? You're like doing the process of putting in gas, and then at like volume a million, it's like 2-for-1 Slim Jim, bitch. I was like, Jesus Christ. That just happened to me.
I think we're going to different gas stations. You're getting the 2-for-1 Slim Jim bitch ad. Yeah. That's what you're getting.
No, it's read by Matt Rife and Black Voice.
I got you.
I love Atlanta. I love doing comedy.
No comedian should. Atlanta is one of the best comedy scenes in the country. That's like the fact that a comedian is saying they don't like Atlanta is like, oh, that's a huge red flag. That is a gigantic red flag.
Yeah, man. Like
that's like a comedian saying, yeah, I don't care for Denver. What?
That doesn't make. Yeah, it's like I've not every show's been great in Atlanta, but a lot of them have been layup drills where it's like this is great. This is great. There's so many great independent producers. You got The Skull, you got Punch. Like amazing.
I've had bad shows there. I'm not a fan of like some of their biggest independent shows. Like I've never been a big fan of Star Bar. I've never done well at Star Bar. I don't like breathing in all that secondhand smoke. You know, I understand why it's so popular. It's a great Monday night show. It can be great. I've just never done well on it. I never liked the Secret Midnight Show. Like, I never had a good set there.
Yeah.
But I can take myself out of those equations and still recognize it's an amazing city, an amazing scene. And yeah. Like, so, yeah, so that was interesting. But yeah, we might as well just settle in. This is all we're talking about for the next 2 years of this podcast is the Matt Rife update.
Well, it's just like, because my whole thing last week was like, this doesn't affect, well, it didn't affect me, but it affected you personally from a standpoint of, I get to headline a comedy club as, it's like almost your opening for Matt Rife. They called it a goddamn raffle show.
Yeah, they didn't have any of the comics. I was not listed on the website for Sunday. Yeah. They didn't say, you know, none of that. You know, and it probably would have hurt if I had I not headlined that club over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, and I wasn't already jaded, you know. But yeah. I mean, if this is my first time at this club, and like, we're gonna bring you in to close out. Oh, man, it'd be great. That's some. But here's the deal: you're gonna close this thing out. So it's like, well, then I guess I'm not really headlining this club. So, but again, I understand why they would do it as a way to leverage people. Because again, I might not have brought in 60 people on Father's Day. You know?
Sure, makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you see our old pal Big Willie?
I did.
Local legend. Did he hop on any of your shows?
Old Man Willie did a couple of guest sets. For those of you unfamiliar, Old Man Willie is a 91-year-old man who takes the bus from the nursing home to the comedy club and does guest spots just about every weekend. Mm-hmm. He's recovering from a hip replacement surgery, so he's got a little cane now with him. He's going to outlive us all. He gets up there, he does a bunch of dirty jokes, essentially. Mm-hmm. A lot of like almost vaudeville level. I mean, like, it's a lot of, there's occasionally every once in a while I hear one that I definitely know is a street joke, but it's in that vein of street jokes. They're usually pretty dirty.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing happens every time, which is he gets a big round of applause when he first gets up there. And his first couple of jokes, he gets laughs. And the more he stays like in this sort of like dirty old man, kind of gross, kind of like not the most progressive about women jokes sometimes.
lightly.
The laughter like dips down. And I think it's also people thinking like, how long are we going to be through this? Like,
yeah.
And then, you know, and then there's like some peaks and swells where he has other jokes that do okay, you know. And so, Old Man Willie was there. He was in full effect.
It's not a fun follow.
I love following him. I always wish that I could go on right after him.
Just to talk shit?
Just to dunk on him. Because in my eyes, he's a fucking comic. Like,
yeah.
I will, like, you know, my standard thing, because one of his jokes is like, I got lucky last night. My roommate fell asleep with his mouth open. That's an Old Man Willie joke, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And so
that's supreme.
And so then I would just like, hey, ready, Old Man Willie, huh? We just watched mm-hmm. an old man confess to several crimes. You know, and it's just like it addresses the situation and it always pops. It always gets a big laugh. You know, and not to say that I'm a lazy comic and I like to have every time I come there. I know I can do that one, but I couldn't this time because there was always a couple of comics in between us. And it was like, all right, I'm not going to do too much of a callback. One time I did talk about, I was like, it's like, am I going to be Old Man Willie? Cause you know, I'm getting older and mostly gray now. And so like, I played with that idea. If I quit right now, will I not become Old Man
Willie? Oh man. Yeah. You better. If you're going to buy his joke soon, do it. Make it happen,
You know, I mean, I'm sure he's got him in his will that he's going to leave the people, and that's going to be, how it goes. But on the other hand, it is kind of inspiring because this is probably the thing that is keeping him alive, is he genuinely loves it. He'll also come up to you and he'll tell you jokes when you're off stage.
Yep.
Usually while you're trying to work on your set, getting ready to go up. That's when he loves to come up and talk to you and tell you other jokes. How many other 91-year-olds, you know, that are out doing shit like that? It's kind of awesome. It's kind of inspiring in a way.
It is. It's nauseating sometimes. I'm just like, I don't want to follow you right now because I might throw up from what you said about face fucking someone.
Yeah.
But
well, I mean, and that's
Springfield, Missouri thing now. It's like. Like when that's not there anymore, it's going to be kind of sad.
It's going to be weird when he's not there. It is going to be weird. But I mean, it's almost, you know, he's not as prevalent, and he's not touring, but he is becoming this sort of legend because enough comics have come through and played that club and have had Old Man Willie experiences. I'm sure he's been talked about on a lot of podcasts. It's like John Fox. Like when we started comedy, John Fox was maybe still doing it for a year or two before he died.
Right.
But like you pretty early on heard all these wild stories about John Fox, this legendary road comic. And so Old Man Willie's going to be kind of like that. You know, there's going to be a lot of more comics telling Old Man Willie stories for years to come than they are telling Madelana Martin stories. Like, you know, and maybe for the best, you know,
like I was like, that's not always a good
thing. A bad thing.
That is like, more people talk about OJ Simpson, but that's not necessarily where we want to be.
Oh man. But yeah, so he was there. So I got the full Springfield experience and it was good though. It was good to be back out on the road. I don't have a whole lot coming up for the reason that we keep almost talking about, but not talking about. I've been holding off on my booking stuff, which I've also realized like, man, if this thing doesn't come through, I am going to be fucked for this summer. you think your schedule's open, man? Oh my god, I'm gonna be like, oh boy, yeah, well, this is a mistake. But I also don't want to be the person who books a bunch of stuff and then has to cancel it. Like that drives me insane, you know?
You don't want that COVID feeling again. Well, stuff got canceled on you, but you'd be like responsible for it,
right?
And the people that weren't being precautious. You're like, hey man, they're like, what's the big deal? And you're like, I'm canceling this, you suck, and I hope you do a clean competition. In what state was that?
I think it was that our state? Was that the state of Indiana?
I thought it was several states. It was, yeah,
it was the one, yeah, no, and yeah. It's coming back. They expanded, I saw the ads for it, they're coming back again this year. So if anybody's looking to die, then check that out. Dwight already fucked up and revealed it. Everybody, I'm trying to get COVID. That's what I've been working on. Yeah. And
fingers crossed. Call for me, please.
No. What about you? I do have one thing I do want to go ahead and plug because I think it is pretty cool. It's a thing that's coming up, which is July 8th, Saturday, July 8th. I'll be back in Evansville, Indiana, doing a benefit show for my buddy Shane Hazen. He is making an independent film. This is sort of like a fundraiser show for him to get it finished and wrapped up. I think it's pretty much made. I think he's in the editing stages now. I've known Shane since forever. I went to college in Evansville, signed him since back then. And he's been in the film game for a long time. He was Terrence Malick's editor for a while, so he's done some real shit. But like a lot of people moved back, I think, during the pandemic or as his parents got older. So now he's trying to make cool shit happen from Evansville, Indiana, which I'm on board with. I want to support people that are doing that.
That's awesome. Yeah.
And so I'll be down there with Rachel Goldman on July 8th. I'll ticket link and all that kind of stuff up on my website by the time this podcast posts. What about
you? The venue?
It's a new venue. I think it's called Stage 2.
Okay.
Which I've heard is really cool. And I believe is run by another old Evansville friend of mine, Troy Davis. I believe that he's the guy behind it. So it should be very cool. So,
oh, dope, man.
Yeah.
That's also like not a ton coming up. I have a full week off with no stand up. Megan and I are going to Michigan next week. So my next show is July 1st at good old Coral Gables, Saugatuck, Michigan. I'm doing it. I had a great time. I don't think they raised the pay, but yeah, it
of
is.
Course. Of course they did. Yeah.
But I always, for some reason, sell a ton of merch there.
That's good.
And it's like,
because you're the only black person that they've ever met, probably.
Just reparate. There's like, I don't know. It's like the times I've done it have been not just white people.
Audience.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know why that is.
But, I don't know, man. I'm kind of joking, but also kind of serious, because they have a poster up with your face on it. And if you were a black person living in that community and you saw a poster with your face on it or a poster with my face on it, and you're like, which one are you going to probably go see? I mean, just genuinely, like, for representation and like, oh shit, we don't get a lot of black entertainers here at this like rich yacht community. But
yeah,
anyway.
Yeah, they The staff likes me there. I know that much.
That's good.
Because I don't know. They always treat me real nice. They make sure I leave with food. I usually just do the show, sell merch, and leave.
Right.
But by the time that the show's over, the kitchen's usually done. But they're like, we'll make you a sandwich.
Oh, that's really nice.
Yeah, they're really cool.
I remember, like, there was a guy, because there's also, like, it's a little entertainment complex, and there was a guy playing in a band, like a Jamaican reggae band, who came over and watched. Like, he got to be the one black guy in the room that night. And then like, but he made a point of, like, sticking around and, like, telling me, like, oh, I really like that. It was good, you know, thing. So then I felt obligated. I had to go watch his band play, like,
That's
like, yeah, but they were good. They were really good at it. But I was like, yeah, I'll come watch a couple songs before I leave. You do have to, like, sell merch and leave, because they don't put you up. They don't give you
that's the worst part. Fucking hate that. Like, you said, like, just you're performing and there's just yachts behind you, and they're like, we couldn't possibly afford a room.
Yeah. We couldn't give you a $120 hotel room. There's no way that could happen.
Not at all. But I remember one of the first times I headlined this room was I was selling my that orange motherfucker ain't my president pint glasses about Trump. And
is that who those are about? Hold on. I gotta get that out of my cabinet. Hold on.
Okay. but I remember, like, doing that joke and being nervous about it, especially in, like, first time headlining for Funny Business, and also doing something so charged politically in a yacht town in Michigan.
Yeah.
But I remember doing it and, like, it's getting an applause break, which is what it was supposed to do. And then, but still getting the part of the crowd that was like, I don't know about this fucking guy. Cause I used to open with that. Like, it used to be in the first, like, 10 minutes. But I was just like, fuck it. I don't like this show that much. So if I don't get invited back, it's fine.
You are, like, following a magician who's not very good at magic.
I was like,
you talk about not wanting to follow Men Willie. You have to fucking, like, less than amateur magician who's also a shitty person. That dude is a fucking dickhead every time that I.
Yeah, he's not good.
He's not good, and he's not a nice person. Yeah.
Yeah. He's yeah, he does suck.
And he's the one who books it or something, or, like, books the local, or he is the local.
He has
some kind of say. He has some kind of say in it. Yeah.
Yeah. He's the one that makes sure you don't get a room, but
probably
I just remember, like, having, like, all right, it's like, it was one of those moments was like, okay, I can talk about this stuff anywhere. There's a lot of people that agree with everybody. It's sort of like, find your audience in this realm, and if you're just yourself more than you're trying to, like, play down to an audience or punch down to an audience. Plus, I have to sell these damn pint glasses. And more importantly, I got to sell these damn pint glasses. I ended up selling, like, 20. It was great. It was a great night. So until the wheels fall off, there are places in Michigan that I will not go back to, but Sagatuck hasn't gotten there yet.
Yeah. First of all, I did it once. And, like, the pay is, like, the least pay of any Midwest one nighter show that I know of.
So headliner is $200 is what I'm
I think getting. It's come up then. It used to not be that. So I think,
it used to be half.
Yeah. It used to be that. Yeah. It used to, like, the features got paid host pay and the headliners got paid feature pay. But then the Funny Business people would always pair it with something really good.
Yep.
So you would go do that and on Wednesday, and then you got to do Dr. Grin's Thursday through Saturday, which paid well and is a great room. And it's like, so they at least try to take care of you in that way. If the money's come up, then I have to assume it's because Alicia and everybody at Funny Business basically just made the room, like, you have to raise the money.
If you want comics to come.
If you want this to continue to be a thing, you have to bump that price up from, like, the 1978 pricing that you're doing. So, yeah. But I also had a time there where I had a crazy allergy freak out on stage and my nose wouldn't stop running. And the whole show was, like, a disaster because I was just kind of trying to do jokes through that, still trying to blow my nose and deal with it. It was I'm allergic to money, I guess, is what it is, which explains my life pretty well.
That would be a terrible allergy.
Yeah. So let's, we do have a question of the week. Let's get to that and then we'll go ahead and wrap it on up. We've covered our bases. Let's see, we spent our required 20 minutes talking about Matt Rife. So we're good there.
Yeah.
And then
we got a Joe Rogan reference in there. This episode, we're knocking it out of the park, baby.
yeah, I just need to talk about purple mattresses really quick. And then, we did have a question that we come in from a tweet. We tweeted that we're out of questions, and we did have a question come in from Gwen Sunkel, Indianapolis-based comedian and producer. Gwen Sunkel wrote in with a question, and I want to get it correct. I should have pulled this up already real quick. Let me see here.
Yeah, guys, send in, please send in those questions. Do not make me go to reddit.com to look at the stand-up comedy thread. The podcast will go so differently from now
on. Yeah.
I have to get to the dredges of society.
Oh my God. What if we did start answering questions from the Reddit stand-up? Because that community is
garbage. We could do a fun one.
Let's give you some correct answers. Where is it? Okay. Okay, here I finally. So Gwen asked, what's a joke you wrote that you wanted to work so badly, but just didn't? And you have one that's coming to mind?
I always think when this question is asked, it's my black atheist joke and the tag surrounding it. Mm-hmm. It's just such a divisive premise of talking about religion, talking about slavery, and trying to marry both of those things. I think the reason it didn't...
I mean, sounds hilarious to me already, but keep
you
going.
Like, yeah, you dig it, don't you? The reason I think it didn't land as much as I wanted it to, or like consistently as I wanted it to, was because of where I had it in my set. Even like playing around with it, it's like not something you could open with. It's not something... like when I wrote this joke, I was like, this is going to be a great late night joke.
Yeah.
And so I kind of wrote it like... late night style. Like it's got a bunch of tags, it's on the cleaner side, it does get a big pop, but then it just kind of fizzles out and ends. Mm-hmm. And I could never figure out how to like wrap it into this beautiful piece that like put a bow on this premise that I love. I think it's one of the best premises I've ever come up with, and I just could not get the confidence to like keep it a consistent part of the set.
It is one of those things where I've had jokes like that too, which the joke overall does well. Mm-hmm. Like, and if you put it in the right part of the set, you've got the trust built, you know, you're getting into something a little bit dicier, or just even if it's not that controversial of a topic, it's just the joke as it is, like works, but that ending, you can never get it to end as big as you, and you're like, do I just chop off the ending? You know, but the ending is still decent, or it puts a tiny bow on it. It's not the big pretty bow you want.
Yeah.
Where it ramps, 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 boom, you know, where it is like this diminishing returns. And I've come to the sort of where I am with it is like, if I like the joke and I like that final part, it's worth doing, you know, because as long as the rest of the joke is mostly working, I haven't wasted anybody's time. If that last line really is just kind of for me.
Yeah.
Then it's fine. Now, again, you can take it to the woodshed. You can workshop it. You can do what you can. But at a certain point, and we know this because we've done it with jokes before, where you can come at it from every different angle. You can rewrite, and it's just not gonna get there. It's not going to figure it out. Now, maybe years later, you might figure out a thing for it. You know, I have the joke now, and it's a very silly joke. Really, it goes into a series of puns. And the third pun is, well, I'll just talk about it, but like, this is a good new example where I was able to figure out how to put a little, like if not a bow, I could put a little parachute on the end to make the third line that I really liked work, which was, you know, I talk about my therapist quit to become a realtor and, you know, and then I'm like, you know, and there's more to it. And I'm like, you know, now I'm worried that this foundation of self-esteem actually has water damage.
You know,
and then there's a couple other versions that are very punny. They're all punny like that, where I'm comparing it to therapy. Like, and then the final one is like the inner child I thought I was nurturing, dead from radon poisoning, which to me is the funniest one.
Right.
That's why I put it at the end. Right.
You're talking about dead kids.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. Dead kids are always funny. No, but, but you know, like you get a laugh or two. Some people like it, but mostly the room doesn't like it. Right. And so the way I finally figured out how to fix it is then I just have to double down on the punnery.
Yeah.
And then now I just say, it's like that last part never gets a big laugh, but it is about radon. So it is technically a silent killer. And then that gets them. I mean, you're shaking your head no. You want to shake your head no on that. I saw that because it is a dad joke. It is such a punny dad joke, which I don't do a lot of. But when I do them, I enjoy throwing them, sprinkling them in. Right.
Yeah. But because it also ends it for you.
It ends it for me. It's like I get to address the fact that it didn't hit. Mm-hmm. And then the people who didn't laugh when it didn't hit, then laugh at that because I'm kind of calling them out to a certain extent.
Right.
But then I'm also like, nope, I'm going to stay in this.
Yeah.
And then until we all laugh. And so here's yet another pun that then finally gets them there.
Right.
Now, I've not always been able to pull that off. That one is one that I actually was able to figure out because there's been ones that I've just like walked away from. And I was just like, okay,
yeah,
I'm not going to figure this one out.
For my own mental well-being, I need to set this down. Set the crack pipe down, baby. I love the method of staying in an uncomfortableness just for like, even if it's just like for a second or like 2 seconds and then hitting them with something else.
Mm-hmm.
So like the audience is feeling like, oh, that was uncomfortable, but he's not done yet. And then you hit him with the radon poison. You know what I mean?
You let them know, like they got uncomfortable, but then you, if you keep going, you show them that you're not uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And so then it's like, makes it more okay for them to. And again, I want to just let everybody in the podcast know, I don't think this is a great joke. This is not what I would consider a top tier joke, but it's in a chunk where I talk about therapy. And it is a true thing that happened. My therapist did quit being a therapist to become a realtor. And I thought that alone was funny enough to talk about a little bit. Right.
Right.
And so, and this got bigger pops at the beginning before I get into the punnery where I talk about that. I was thinking about older jokes that I had that I just always tried to get to work. And, you know, I've got a couple of ones that I've been working on over the past year that, again, it's like they're just kind of clunky.
Right.
I think the idea is good and they just need more work. But what I want to talk about is that it's actually after my second album, Bloodmouth. My joke about the transphobic comics in the Hong Kong comedy scene when I went there and performed. And that joke did not have a high ratio of working.
Right.
All the way through the way that I wanted it to. And so when we recorded the album, it was like a relief when that hit because it's like, this is an important point that I'm making. It's basically I'm making a trans rights joke.
Yeah.
You know, back in 2018 when I recorded this. And so I was making this thing about why transphobia is wrong. And then it also touches on this idea of like gender fluidity, you know, and things like that. Like as a body through me, because it goes into this whole thing about how I'm, you know, I don't remember how the joke goes, but it also has a pun. It has a pun in there too to soften it. But that joke, sometimes it worked great and a lot of times it didn't because people were just, I think, so many different reasons. Either they were uncomfortable with the idea of trans people.
Yeah.
Or they were uncomfortable with a straight white guy talking about trans issues on stage.
Yep.
They were worried I was going to somehow back into being racist against these Asian comics.
Sure.
Who were the ones that were so transphobic. It's basically about how they just had a bunch of like shitty trans jokes. The scene was inundated with it when I was there. And so I stuck with it. I didn't drop that joke. And I thank God, knock on wood, we didn't have to sweeten the album. We didn't have to add last to that joke.
Yeah.
But, you know, I recorded 4 shows that weekend. And most of it is all from one show, but I think there's a couple of jokes that we pulled in because I just either didn't have time to get to them or not from a different show. And that might be one that we pulled from, like, instead of it being the Friday early show, it's like the Saturday late show.
Okay.
That joke finally
that got him.
Worked the way it was supposed to. So we're like, all right, we're going to take it from that night.
Right.
There's not a lot of that on that album. Like 90% of the album is just one set. But and then I haven't done that joke ever since. But I wanted to document it. I wanted to get it down, you know, and it's also because, you know, I turned, you know, it's on album. It's time to start over. That's definitely one that I wanted to work because I thought, first of all, I thought the joke was good. I thought it was funny. The structure was really good. The turn on it was really good. But I think I was just, you know, there is that thing where that's exactly the right point you know, where this is before Chappelle started shooting his off, mouth off about trans people. And so not a lot of comics were talking about trans rights, right? Mm-hmm. Or trans issues at all.
Not from that aspect. Not from not on the pro side.
Right, not on the pro side. It hadn't become like a very popular thing for the dumb edgelords either, who all jumped on it when they saw that, oh, well, Chappelle's making people mad about it. We should also make people mad about it.
Oh, right? I disagree. I think it's been a long-standing
ignorant. I think it has been around. Like, it's in the same way that you see an old-timey comic will love to get a laugh from like implying a guy in the audience might be gay. Huh? Yeah. Wouldn't that be crazy? Huh? Yeah. If he went to the gay bar, why right. is that, you know? No, I think it's always been there, clearly, because I'm talking about all these Asian comics who had transphobic jokes.
Right.
But I think just as far as being like maybe a Twitter topic, it had not become mm-hmm. as popular then. But you got both sides. You got people who were, they don't want to hear about this. They want to ignore that, you know, trans people exist. Yep. And then you also have people on the left who are like, oh, this fucking white dude's about to say some shit that we don't want. You know, it was like everyone in the room is uncomfortable for different reasons.
Balance beaming. You're on the high wire.
I'm just doing the Neo. Like,
ooh. Yeah, just like it's 140 mile per hour winds.
Yeah.
You're on 1 foot.
Yeah. But and again, it would work sometime. It worked enough that I knew that there was something valid there because there were people that connected. And then also this, I think this is an important thing to include in there too. It's like I ran that joke by some friends of mine who were in the LGBTQ community. Mostly, the most importantly, I ran it by Sophie Hughes, who is a trans comic who I was friends mm-hmm. with. I was like, this is the joke as I've written it. Is there anything wrong in here language-wise, the way that I'm approaching it? Is there a blind spot that I have that you can help me out with? And, you know, she was very positive and supportive. And she did say, because I talk about they refer to them as ladyboys. It's talking about how in Southeast Asia, they're referred to as ladyboys. So I was using the terminology that the Asian comics were using in their jokes. All their jokes are about ladyboys, right? And Sophie says, like, I got really uncomfortable when you said that word.
Right.
But then the rest of the joke, I understand why you had to say that word.
Right.
And because of the way the rest of the joke goes, it's... not, I don't know, she didn't say forgiven, but she's like, it makes sense and you understand why. And so the joke is as a whole, it's fine. But
yeah,
it's just like you were talking about, like, you know, with like Louis saying the N-word.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, I don't like that word. You know,
it is. So it's like, I'm not. Yeah. You've lost the impact that you're going for.
Right.
When I've taken a step back.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like, especially, you know, the joke that you're talking about. And you've brought it up, like your own appearance matters mm-hmm. in a way that probably like you don't write that way, but it definitely does matter because people are reading you. Your part of your job is to be read mm-hmm. visually, not just heard. So it's definitely like I'm happy that you stuck with a joke because sometimes you don't write a joke just so it could have this like giant pop and applause. Sometimes you write a joke because you believe in it mm-hmm. and think that it's important. And I think that's what you did. And mm-hmm. I think the fact that you ran it past several other people from that community just shows a level of care and respect. It doesn't matter if you write like a million of these jokes, but you can tell who actually takes the time to make sure they're not actively causing harm to these communities.
Right. And the thing is also too, which thank you for the compliment, but also, yeah, you have to be aware, two things you said that are really good there, but I want to talk about, yeah, when you are writing about any other community than that's not your own, like, yeah, you gotta do a little, you know, pre-research, pre-reaching out, make sure that you're mm-hmm. not coming off, you know, because that's the step that so many comics don't take. They just think like, oh, I can comment on whatever, you know, like I have a joke about now where I'm like, I have this list that I made of the things that make women come. Right.
And
the idea is that straight men are the last thing on the list. We're the bottom of the list.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's a dunking on straight men and their inability to please women. But as I was making this list, I ran past some female comics. I was like, is this funny? Is there mm-hmm. anything problematic in this list? Cause it's going very broad and it's ridiculous. And like, you know, like one of the, I have a couple like obvious like vibrators and lesbians and things like that. And I talk about how great they are. And then like the third example is equal pay. So then there's the first punchline.
Right.
Right. And then I have some other examples in there, but it was the same thing. Like I'm not a woman.
Yeah.
I'm still looking at this as an outside thing. And so, yeah, taking those extra steps, I think is important and worth it. But then also, yeah, the way you can't get around the way you look on stage. And like, as I get older, people are more and more going to assume that I'm like on the wrong side of shit.
Yeah.
There's this old white man getting up here with this gray beard.
Yeah.
And then, so yeah, it's perfectly fine. I'm making fun of my second chin. I'm talking about, you know, marriage and stuff like that. But then I start to get into these issues. Like, people are like, probably going to assume that I'm going to say something that their racist uncle is going to say.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the old man Willie problem.
Yeah, you know, right. I think really if we dig into his jokes about his roommate sleeping with his mouth open, it's actually a deconstruction of the, you know, the problems of post-capitalist society and the way that we treat our elderly people, that they have to have roommates, you know, that
that's fantastic. I think that's a good bow on that question. That was a fantastic question from Gwen. Thanks for asking. I always love talking about the thought process of what goes into an actual bit to try to get it to work. And I think if you can kind of crowdsource it, come from different angles, because you can't see every different angle, but you know, other people can, I think that just makes your writing better.
Yeah.
And it makes it just means that it's going to work for more people. So
exactly.
That's a great way to think about it.
Yeah. One asterisk to that though, too, is because we've talked about this previously on the podcast, you do that with the bit already finished. I think you don't takes like, you, like we've talked about group writing and writing workshops and how we're both not fans of that. I think you have to have like, this is what I want to talk about. This is the angle I'm taking. Here's the lines that I'm going to use. Cause you can't just be like, hey, I'm thinking of writing a thing about trans people and how I support them. What do you think? No.
Yeah.
You got to have all the lines in there so we know like what's a red flag or what's a, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think crowdsourcing it, anything that you think could be problematic or is dicey, you know, an area that's a little bit, you know, treacherous for you to be walking in. Yeah. But I think you have to take the complete bit, you know. And another example of this too, and these are both trans, but you know, same thing. If I was going to talk about race, I would talk to you and, you know, my one other Black friend. And I
just Matt Rife's voice. Oh my God.
Oh damn. Fucking yeah. I'm friends with his voice. Yep. I tell the story about my friend Kit and her transition and her transitioning and me talking to her the next day when she's in the hospital recovering. I literally went to Kit's house and performed that for her in her living room before I ever did it on stage.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is the way I'm gonna talk about this, the funny conversation we had the day after you had your, you know, your surgery, your bottom surgery. Yeah. And you know, I wasn't going to go do it if I didn't get her blessing, you know, and if she would have been like, I don't like that part, but the most, you know, like, yeah, you got to do the work to, again, as we've said so many times on this podcast, be a human being first.
Yes, please.
And then be a comic.
Please. It's It ain't hard. It ain't hard. Just, be compassionate.
Just takes effort. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think this was a pretty good one. So look forward to next week's continuing chapter on the thoughts on Matt Rife. And
here's the question. That's our world now, baby.
I will say I did, when I was doing the research, I did see a Variety article about him announcing his world tour, and it's for like 2 years long and how quickly it sold out. And they did say they've not seen anything in comedy like this for at least 20 or 30 years.
It's
like wild. And again, he'd been doing stuff, he'd been on Wild and Out, he'd been doing stuff, you know, but to go from where he was to this, like that sort of leap, they've not seen it forever. So maybe by next week we'll have actually watched some of his comedy, but I doubt it. And
don't promise that. Don't promise that outrageous thing.
But thank you everybody for listening. We do appreciate you. If you do have a question for the podcast, we love to get those so we don't have to take on Reddit and the sub threads.
Don't make us do this.
You can email those questions to us at our Gmail account, which is mattanddwight@gmail.com. that is mattanddwight@gmail.com. I'm gonna give one quick shout out on the sign out. Shout out to my buddy JD Short, who does listen to the podcast, even though he's not a comedian, but he just likes the podcast. He likes listening to us talk. So it's hanging out with us. So that's shout out to JD. Thank you for supporting the podcast and being a good friend. Dwight, also, you want a shout out?
Yes, my in-laws. They listened to several of these podcasts on their way to Wisconsin, and they enjoy it a lot.
Good.
Right, yeah. Also, not comics, but come from a perspective of watching one try to make it, and they like our perspective and our little chats.
Yeah, the one trying to make it, and then and her husband, and so
yeah, exactly. And then I was like, "Hey, could you? Can I borrow $200, please? I got to make it to Sagatuck."
Yeah, they were expecting it. Oh yeah, my God, there was a couple podcasts, a couple episodes, yeah. Like they just handed you money as soon as you walk in. All right, thank you, everybody. We'll see you next week.